We're starting a very exciting limud this semester, the spring 2017 semester of HaMidrashah QC. We've learned in the style that we learned in the Midrashah. We've learned Bereshit, we've learned Shmot, we've learned Vayikra, we've learned Bamidbar. Obviously, there's a lot more to learn in the context of those Sfarim, both in the style that we learn and obviously in the infinite wisdom of Torah. But we're finally getting to that last Sefer, that concluding Sefer, that culminating Sefer. It's a really exciting time for us as we as a Midrashah are being Misayim Chumash this semester, but also in that we're going forward and we're studying possibly the least learned Sefer of Chumash. It's up there. It's maybe a tie between Vayikra and Devarim. Not clear. But at least the parshiot of Vayikra fall out during the school year. One of the educational challenges of our time is that very often we don't learn Chumash as Chumash. That's why in the Midrashah we do learn Chumash as Chumash. Very often there's no such thing as a Chumash class. What is there? Parsha class. Which means that if there are parshiot which always fall during breaks in school and in seminary and in other areas where people just take off, that means that those parts of Torah will never be learned. That's despite the fact that you can't relegate any parsha to covering in a week itself, and assuming that that's going to happen. And the modern system of teaching parsha in a lot of our educational systems is supremely problematic. But the book that does suffer the most from that is Devarim. Devarim is always during the summer. It's inevitably during the summer. So it's a hard book to engage, and we're going to talk about that a lot. It's a hard book to understand. What is Sefer Devarim about? It's this whole speech of Moshe Rabbeinu that culminates the Torah. We have this incorrect and sort of incorrect understanding of Devarim. Many people put it forth as, oh, it just retells stories in Chumash, and that's not really true. There may be three or four incidents that we see repeated in a totally different perspective, but there's a lot of new material. But not only is it not a new material, it's framed in a very different way. It's given over in a very different way. The language is totally different in Devarim. But it's this long speech by Moshe Rabbeinu. And the worst pitch for a book ever is, here is the book of the longest drasha in history. It's like asking people to space out. Right? But it's hard. It's hard to get into Devarim. It's hard to understand what it is. And because it's these broader themes and this different language that tends to be a lot more flowery and it's a lot more poetic and a lot more beautiful in a lot of ways that we're going to talk about. But it's hard to understand. What are the themes? What is each parsha about? What is the difference? Take a look over the weekend. What's the difference between Bet Hanan and Akev, the second and third parshiot in Devarim? They sound very similar. I get it. Serve God. But what's the difference? Why are they two separate parshiot? Why is Moshe going on and on about these themes? Why are there certain halachot that are being repeated here and certain halachot that are not, and certain halachot appearing here for the first time? Why are we repeating certain stories but not other stories? Why are those stories being retold to us not in chronological order? Why do they appear in the parshiot that they appear? Why is Moshe giving over this whole book? Why is this the cap of Torah? Why is this the coda of Torah? Why is this where Torah comes to its fulfillment, its culmination, its end point? How does this wrap up everything that we have set out to accomplish in all of Chumash? Those are powerful questions. And questions that I have certainly never seen engaged publicly in shirim outside of the shirim of my Rebbe, Rav Amos. And even shirim, even beautiful, deep shirim from deep Balei Hashkafa that I have had access to, and Sfarim that we do have access to. Even in the yeshivas, Bein Azmanim, even in Eretz Yisrael, is from Tisha B'Av until Rosh Chodesh Elul. Could even go longer than that. You have the 3 weeks in there. You have Shavuot Arba Tamuz. You have Tisha B'Av, and so much of Devarim gets lost amongst these other things. Which, by the way, they're all interlinked with. They have to be if that's when it falls out during the year, and we'll talk about that as well. What's the relationship between Devarim and Tisha B'Av and the 7 weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and how does it link into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Sukkot? All of these are rich questions about Devarim that, again, are so often not discussed. And again, even when they are, so if we're on intercession, or if we're in camp, or if there's no school, or if there's no midrashah, you know, if you've spent a year or a year and a half in Israel, if you got that opportunity, so you leave after Shavuot, and I don't know what happens next. Maybe you come back for Shana Bet, so then you're just gearing up for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and you kind of pretend that Devarim's not happening because I don't know what to do with the end of Devarim. Certainly not without the beginning. I don't know what's going on at all. And then we'll get back into Chumash et Bereshit, which basically means we're going to do Parsha again. So we're going to learn Devarim. And we'll also learn why it's very likely that the reason why Devarim is the most overlooked sefer is because it is the one that's most relevant to us. Because just as we are, and we'll talk, we'll give sources for this next time, but just as we're coming to the culmination of history, just as history is coming to wrap itself up, the parallels in that with Chumash wrapping itself up, that's where we're going to learn how to wrap up history. And the parallels there are deep and beautiful, and we have very good sources on this. From the Gra, we'll talk about it next time. So it's really exciting for me to be learning Devarim with you, to be learning Devarim together. In the shorter shir that we have today, and as an introduction, both because it's a beautiful introduction in general, because it's our first Midrash shir of the semester, and we haven't looked at Chumash in this way, and also because we'll see it links directly into Devarim, I've been waiting to give this shir until now, even though we could have given it at the beginning of any semester, is the question of, why is Chumash broken down into 5 books? Something those of you who have been here before know that we talk about a lot is the depth of what it means that there are Chamisha Chumshei Torah, that we refer to Torah as Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And if we take the words Chamisha Chumshei Torah, there's something very interesting. There are 3 words there. What do they actually translate into? Literally.
Five.
The 5/5 of Torah.
Chamisha Chumshei Torah.
2 of the words that we use to define Chumash inherently link into the fact that it exists as an entity of 5. It's not that Torah was arbitrarily broken up into 5 different books for the sake of convenience, so that way publishing companies can make more money. I don't know why people think that Chumash was broken up into 5 books. But there was no convenience sake of breaking up Chumash into 5 books. It's its very name, and a name always indicates an essence. Chamisha, Chumshei, Torah, the 5/5 of Torah. And what that means is that each chumash, again, that same lashon, chamesh, each chumash, each sefer, has to be understood on its own within the context of all of Torah Shebichtav. You have to see it in the context of Torah. But after seeing it within the context of Torah, we have to ask the question, what is the nature of that sefer? What is the nature of that chumash? What is its name? And what does that mean if a name indicates an essence? What is its essence? What is its identity? We have to think about what is that Chumash inherently in and of itself. Because it's one of those 5 parts, and it was broken up to be one of those 5/5, because it has its own name, its own identity, its own essence, its own themes. And one of the bumper stickers of the Midrashah is its own narrative. Right, which is something that we do here that we often don't say anywhere else. Which is, and especially with the Devarim, like I said, is going to be challenging. What is the story of Devarim? From the first Pasuk until the last Pasuk, if it does have an identity and themes, and it has a narrative, if Devarim is a story, if Devarim is, it's a book that has a beginning and a middle and an end. In what way does Devarim lead to Evet Chanan, lead to Ekev, lead to Re'eh? How is each Parsha leading to the next Parsha? Progressing that narrative forward and then coming to a fevered pitch and a conclusion for itself and for all of Torah. Im nitzavim vayilecha azinu and vezot habracha. What's the narrative? What's the story? What are the themes? What are the essence? It has to be asked by every single one of these chumashim. And this concept of 5 is integral to Torah. We see that here in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. We talked about how we're going to learn in Halakha the halachas of Purim. When he said, after that, we're in the halachas of the Seder nights. And on Seder nights, what do we use to get us through Seder night? The Haggadah. And often, again, sometimes with a lack of sensitivity. So we look at the Haggadah, and we study the Haggadah, and we create different Torah about the Haggadah, and we go on and on and on and on and on. And then, finally, we get to the moment we've all been waiting for, which is the meal, thank you, for being honest, right? We finally get to the meal. And after a meal, after a lot of Divrei Torah, hopefully, and a lot of Haggadah, and a lot of food, and a lot of wine on an empty stomach, and then a lot of matzah, which may or may not be nauseating, right? Then everybody's just kind of sitting back, lounging around, and you've got like Heil Nirta, it's all good, we're singing, and there's like those funny songs at the end, and like, you really get, if you're, it depends on your family, like, there are two different types of families, and like, fine. You know, if you're in that family that gets really into it, and like, everybody's going like, you know, they're saying Chag Gadya, and like, maybe somebody's on key because they're not drunk yet, right? Chag Gadya, right? And there are songs that are there for the kids to keep them happy if they're still awake to keep them around, and the answer is no. That's not what they are. But the Haggadah was put together, and everything in the Haggadah is so rich in meaning. Chag Gadya, you should know Chag Gadya, the Gra wrote a Perush al Pi Kabbalah on Chag Gadya. And as often with things in life, the things that are looked at as being the least significant often hold the most tremendous layers of depth. Pay a lot of attention to the end of the Haggadah, the secrets of the universe are in there. It's beautiful Perush of the Gra, and many others on Chag Gadya. It's not just a children's song. There's a lot of depth happening there. What's the one before that we like to sing? Echad Miodea. Echad Miodea is defining for us essentially what thing in this world embodies that number. That's what that song is doing. Echad. There's nothing more inherently. There's nothing else that relates to one like God relates to one. There is nothing. Shnei luchot habrit. Somehow inherently, the avot need to be three, and the Gemara says they are three, and they can't be more. There are only three avot. Four, the imahot, and there are dafka three avot, and there are dafka four imahot. And why is one three and one four, and how are they relating to different essences in who and what they are? What is one layer of the difference between men and women, or between the avot and the imahot, in the differentiation between three and four? And then five is chamishah chumshei Torah, the essential five, the quintessential five, five par excellence, as my Rebbe would say. That's going to be Torah. It has to be five. In the same way that right after that, Shisha Shidrei Mishnah. That somehow five and Torah Shebichtav is five, Torah Sheba'al Peh is six. Why is that? What does that mean? What's the layers of meaning behind that? That Torah Shebichtav is an embodiment of a reality of five, Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Sheba'al Peh is an embodiment of a reality of six. What does that mean? What is that doing? What is that showing us? So let's think about this concept of Torah Chumash being relating to this essence of five. What letter correlates with the number five in Hebrew? Hey. Letter Hey. There's a lot of incredibly deep Torahs about the letter Hey. You want to see the first place to always go to if you want to understand the depth of a number and what it means. Is the Maharal. Maharal Miprag, throughout his works, constantly weaves in this discussion of the depth of what each number means. It's an incredible thing. And we're still waiting for somebody. And like at this point, we have so many Sfarim, like somebody can't get around to this, that like somebody to actually make a Sefer that just compiles in numerical order the Maharal's Torahs on each number. If anybody's listening anywhere, here or online, and you want a project, I will be the first one to buy it. Because it's just all over his works. He just explains these numbers and just to actually have them clearly set out in a Sefer where they're with those quotes would be amazing. But he talks about the number five in his Sefer, Ner Mitzvah, the letter Hey in the number five. My Rebbe's expanded on it, and we'll talk about it from both those places, but a lot of this is founded within the Maharal. A lot of it is. I don't think all of it is, but I think a lot of it is founded in the Maharal. In the beginning of Ner Mitzvah. Chazal already talk about the inherent meaning of the number, of the letter Hey. All the way at the beginning of Bereshit. On the first pasuk after the discussion of the creation story, the first telling of the creation story, which is a few pasukim into Perek Bet pasuk Dalet in Bereshit, it says, "Eilo todot haShemayim vaHaaretz b'hi baram." These are the toldot of the heaven and the earth, Bihibar Am. when God created the way that Chazal and Shaddai, but God created them. And in that pasuk, in the Torah itself, the hay is small. And Rashi quotes Chazal, says, what is this Bihi Bar'am all about? So Chazal, one layer of meaning that Chazal bring out is that Bihi Bar'am means the hay Bira'am. That God created them with the letter hay. Pasuk there is quoted, Ki Beka Hashem Tzur Olamim.
Beka Hashem Tzur Olamim. With the name Yud and then a hey.
Did God create worlds? What worlds do we have? Louder. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. So say Chazal that God created the worlds with the letters Yud and Hey. Olam Haba was created with a Yud, and Olam Hazeh is created with a Hey. So what does that mean? So let's add one floor of meaning to this. Taking a look at the Hey.
Well, so let's start with the Yud.
Rashi brings this out in a few places. Yud al shema machshava ne'emra, that Yud is relating to thought, Yud is relating to origins, Yud is relating to source. Yud is the smallest letter. It hovers above all the other letters. It doesn't even touch the ground. It's that reality that's above, that reality that's beyond, and also it's the smallest, most condensed letter. It's the letter that's that nikuda, as the Sfarim discussed. It's that point. That singular, indivisible point that reflects unity and oneness. That's that Yud, that origin point, that Yud. That's Olam Haba. When we get to a reality of Olam Haba, there is only oneness. There is only godliness. There is only origin. There is only source that emanates from that which is transcendental, from that which is supernal. Olam Haba is a Yud. Olam Hazeh is a hay. The hay is actually, if you look at it, comprised of two letters.
If you can write in proper block letters, and unlike me, I can't really draw great block letters.
What letters is the hay comprised of? Letter? A yud and a dalid. The actual physical structure of a yud is a dalid, and inside of it is a yud. Go with it. It is. I can't draw well, but it is. A hay has a dalet at the outside and a yud on the inside. What is a dalet about? So this is Chazara, for those of you who were with us when we learned the fourth book of Chumash last year in Bamidbar. These are Bamidbar issues. That dalet is all about spreading out. We talk about in Chumash, Pesukim, in Tanakh, that things spread out to Arba Ruchot Ha'olam, to the four corners of the earth, is the way that we say it in English. It even translates, meaning it even has a parallel in English. The four winds of the earth become in English the four corners of the earth. But this idea of spreading out, when the bracha is given, Ufaratzta Yama Vitzafona, Yama Vitzafona Vitzemana Vanegba, I definitely did that in order. But in those, in all four directions, spreading out as far as you can possibly spread out. What? There's a song? Okay. Yikes. It's spreading out in all those four directions. But it's the letter and the number of dispersal, of moving out. Here's where we're getting into really the kind of where the Maharal really, really beautifully brings this out.
He talks about that and he says that it has to be reflected in the physical structure of the letter as well. The same way that the yud is that indivisible spot, the dalid acts as an axis, pointing in all of those four directions. The very physical structure of the dalid
is pushing out in all of those four directions, spreading out, moving apart. And we talked about that so much last semester when we learned Sefer Midbar, because Sefer Midbar, our bumper sticker for Sefer Midbar was the rise of the individual, right? Which comes at the very beginning of the Sefer with the census. But immediately following the rise of the individual, we then have to still do something with all of those individuals. And so what do we immediately do with them? What do we talk about? The second half of Parshat Bamidbar?
Giving them their own home.
Makom, which is four camps, one on each side, because this is the uniqueness of each individual, and the spreading out as far as possible, and even within Klal Yisrael, putting one to the north, one to the south, one to the east, one to the west, we're spreading out. What we talked about was hopefully the goal of the Midbar was not just to spread out, but also to take all of those four sides and bring them together. And that's why they come into an encampment, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it's all about dispersing. It's all about spreading out. And the reason why the Maharal discusses this at length in the beginning of Ner Mitzvah, which is on Hanukkah, we're fighting against one of the Galuyot. We're fighting against Yavan. Wouldn't you know it? How many stages of Galut are there? How many Galuyot are there, according to everywhere in Chazal? Four stages of Galuyot. Bavel, Prasumadai, Yavan, and Edom. Because the goal of, as the Maral discusses there, the goal of these Galuyot is to push away, is to say, no, there isn't any unity. You, Klal Yisrael, aren't one in the sense that there's only one. Because look, I am connected you. And if I can stand up to you, and I can fight you, and I can suppress you, and I can rule over you, then first of all, you're wrong. But even if you think you're right, there's you and there's me. So there isn't a oneness. And we go through all four stages of that, trying to pull away from any sense of there being something which unifies all of reality into a oneness. Coming back to the ultimate source, the ultimate origin. But what's inside of that Dalid? You've got that Yud. Inside of a Dalid, what a Hey is inside of a Dalid is that Yud. What the Hey is all about is a recognition that while in this world, because this world is in the image of what letter? A Hey. Olam Hazeh, not Olam Haba. Olam Hazeh is about reality where I seem to exist, and you 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 seem to exist, and even you seem to exist. Seem, I don't know. Right? There seem to be so many of us. They're so different. There are so many things in this world, so many forces in this world. It's a world of multiplicity and pulling in different directions. Four corners of the earth, of Olam Hazeh. Our Baruch Hu Ta'olam. What the Hey embodies is that those, everything in reality, no matter how dispersed it may be, unifies together underneath that, within the entirety of the physical world, is one source, is one ultimate unifying force, is one origin, is one source of life, is one Elohim Chaim. That's that source of Olam Haba. That's the reality of Olam Haba. That Olam Haba lives within Olam Hazeh. That's what the Hey is. That's what Olam Hazeh is. It's the farce of the Dalid that needs to be peeled away to reveal the Hey. Sorry, to reveal the Yud. To reveal the spirituality inside the physicality. To reveal the godliness inside of everything in this world. That's what we're here to do. And that's why even in Sefer Bamidbar, when we have the rise of the individual who then break up into camps, they break up into four camps, but what? Why are they four camps? What are they? In what way are they arranged? With the Mishkan and godliness and spirituality in the center. Even in Bamidbar, which is all about the uniqueness of the individual, there is an emphasis that an individual only exists meaningfully in the context of the Hey, in the context of that oneness, revealing that oneness that exists in the center, crowding around it on all sides and revealing that it's what unifies everything. That's what we as Jewish people are here to do. That's what the Hey embodies. And that's what Chumash is. That's why there are Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The Torah is the revelation of the spirituality within the physical world. It tells us what this world is really about, how to live in it, both halachically, but also what does it mean to be a Jew, to live godliness in this world, to reveal godliness in the world, to reveal the godliness of this world. So the Torah itself is living in a reality of Hey and a reality of Five. Because it is the guidebook to the unity of the universe. It's revealing the yud underneath the dalet that makes it a hey. And the Torah itself is the blueprint for all of reality. Meaning, not only is Olam Hazeh created with a hey, and not only is it the basis of Chamisha Chumshei Torah, which is, tells us exactly what reality is, but as we've talked about many times in the past, that the Torah is the blueprint of reality. I didn't bring the sources again because we actually had a whole shiur on it at the beginning of Bamidbar. In terms of how do you learn Chumash, and we talked about it at length, and we also talked about it by Parsha Yitro. But just to quote the source again outside, the first Medrash in Medrash Rabbah, which says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu mabit batorah uvara'at ha'olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gazed into the Torah. It's black on white, first Medrash of Medrash Rabbah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gazed into the Torah and created the world. The Torah is literally the blueprint of reality. The mashal that's given there is that when a king wants to build a castle, he hires a contractor who uses blueprints, and just like a contractor uses blueprints, so too is the Torah the blueprint of the world. We're living in a reality of Torah. Very literally, we live in that hay. We live in Olam Hazeh. We're living in Torah. Which is food for thought for another shiur, which we've also given at other times, but food for thought for another shiur. What it means, the fact that we're living in Torah, if the world is a reflection of Torah. And in that, the Torah itself, when it's created, is created fundamentally using what are the building blocks of Torah? Letters. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, literally and figuratively, uses those letters to speak. Baruch She'amar V'Haya HaOlam. God speaks and creates the world, utilizing those building blocks of Torah, utilizing the Torah itself. Baruch She'amar V'Haya HaOlam. God creates the world through speech. Shakol niya bidvaro. Everything is created through his dibor. Kadosh Baruch Hu is creating all of reality through speech. And speech is fundamental to Torah. And when we think about speech, any of you, any linguists in the room, any of you familiar with how speech breaks down? There are different ways that speech can manifest, and it breaks down into a certain number of ways. If you are not linguists, I'll give you a hint. It's probably going to be our favorite number of the day. 5. Both in terms of linguistics itself, and unsurprisingly, our svarim have, our deeper sources in Chazal have indicated this long before, that there are hey motzaot hapeh. There are 5 ways that speech manifests. Right? What are different ways that we use to produce speech? Think about it. Just think about it physically, even. Throat, gutturals, the tongue, teeth, lips, and the palate. Those are the 5. The groniim, lishoniim, chichiim, shiniim, and svatiim. Those are the hei motzaot hapeh. Speech itself is divided into 5 different ways in which it is produced. But it's more than that. Because all of speech is really unified, meaning we use our throat and our teeth and our palate and our tongue and our lips to cut the words as they come out of our mouth. But they all come from one unified source. They all come from that wind, if you will, that breath from inside. And what letter of all letters would indicate a letter of breath? The hey. The hey.
That was so cool.
So the hay is the source of speech. It's the ultimate source of speech. And it's divided itself into, it breaks up into 5 different parts through our speech itself. So hay is integral to Torah. Speech is integral to Torah. And hay is integral to speech. Both in terms of its origins and in terms of how it manifests. So there's a lot of beautiful ways in which hay is so essential to what Torah is. talk about it more when we, in the next year, but even just that concept of bringing it from, that's speech, it's the way of bringing it from the inside and moving it to the outside. And moving it from that hay and from that breath and cutting it and bringing it into a more specific form. We'll talk about that more next time. Now the reason why, and this is just a, you know, an overall concepts of the potential meanings of the relationship between Chamisha Chumshi Torah and the number 5 and the letter Hey. The reason why I wanted to save this shiur, though it could have been given at the beginning of Bereishis Shmo Vayikra or Bamidbar for Devarim, is because it has double meaning by Devarim. Because not only is Devarim one of the Chamisha Chumshi Torah and therefore needs to be understood as its own unique sefer with its own name, its own essence, its own identity, its own narrative, its own themes. But not only that, but what else is unique about Devarim? It is the 5th book. It is the sefer that is the sefer Hey. That it's sefer number 5. It's the Chamesh of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And a thinking person hears that somehow then, it has to then bring forth everything that Chumash is setting out to accomplish. Because Chumash is structured as 5 and it is the 5th book. Even in that and of itself, it's bringing Chumash to a culmination. And that means that everything that we talked about today that's true of Chumash has to be specifically true of the Chumash of Devarim. This concept of the Yud within the Dalet, of the physical, of the spiritual reality that exists within the physical. We talked extensively about, what did we just talk about for the last 10 minutes? What concept? Speech. And what's the name of the book? Devarim. It's the book of speech. Interesting. 5th book of speech. Hey, is related to speech. A book which is clearly going to have to be dealing with the tension between the Dalet and that Yud and create that Hey. The tension between the spiritual and the physical. So this isn't even just true of Chumash, but it's heightened in such a degree by Sefer Devarim. And next time when we actually start Sefer Devarim proper, we'll talk about what are the overarching themes of Devarim that we're going to have to talk about. Everything that we've talked about for the last half an hour got its own separate shir because it needed its own separate shir, both to give it the kavod that it needs being broader Chumash shir, but also because it's in and of itself needs to be examined in the context of Devarim. And that's aside from all of the Devarim stuff that we're going to identify as strictly Devarim concepts. So with that, we're going to stop here. And Bezrat Hashem, on Monday, we will dive directly into Devarim and start to figure out what are those themes, essences, names that we're going to have to follow as they take us through this incredible journey of Sefer Devarim.